Before we dive in, I want to provide a trigger warning. This is a heavy episode. Kara gets raw and open and honest about her journey with lipedema and lymphedema. She talks about surgery she's had, and some of that might be a bit graphic for some. She also talks about the changes that have occurred with her body, some struggles with internalized fat phobia, relationships that have been lost through changing the size of her body due to needing to have surgical procedures that were decided between her and her care provider for her overall well-being. So I want you to be aware that some of these conversations could be triggering. And she uses some strong language. I learned so much, and I'm always so thankful when anyone comes on the show to share their journey. And if you're ready, here we go. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today we are joined by Kara. Kara joins us from Pale Ginger Pear over on Instagram and all the socials. She is an incredible warrior and advocate and voice of support and inspiration for those who struggle with lymphedema and lipedema. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so honored to have this conversation with you and have learned so much from you and have been made to feel less alone as well. And I'm sure you hear that a lot. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I hear it from time to time, but it's always nice because it combats the horrible messages or the like thousands of dick pics.
Oh no. I'm so sorry that you have to deal with that because you visibly share your body. And that when we do that on social media, especially if those of us who exist in much larger bodies, we tend to get a lot of spammy things we wish we would never have to see.
Yeah. But even when I'm like fully dressed in pajamas, I get 1,000 comments and messages. So it doesn't matter the level of what I'm wearing because let's face it, like when you're larger, you can't hide your size or your curves.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter what you're wearing. If they like the size and the curves, they'll be like creepy towards you.
They'll comment. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry you have to deal with that. Yeah. It's definitely a downside of social media. Why don't you share with the listeners the differences between the two? And we'll start with lymphedema. Those lymph nodes.
Yeah. So lymphedema is a little bit more common and doctors know about it more because it affects men and women. So, you know, when you get the men involved, then they pay attention.
So frustrating.
But lymphedema is where your lymph nodes or your lymph channels are damaged. So like it'll flow down properly, but then has like a hard time flowing back up. And that's where it'll pool like the fluid in like the leg or an arm. Sometimes like the torso, but it seems to be like a limb. You'll see a lot of women after having like lymph nodes removed because of breast cancer, like one arm will balloon up kind of thing. So it's when a lymph node's not working or the channel's like damaged. So I had an injury to my left leg in high school and I had damaged a lymph channel. And so it was kind of like when you get a kink in a hose and it doesn't want to flow back up.
Yeah.
And so it was like starting to pull up. And that's actually how I ended up finding out about lipedema because I was getting treatment for the lymphedema. And I was kind of complaining to the physical therapist about how I was tired of every doctor telling me just to lose weight and not giving me a solution and not believing me when I said, like, I'm active. I have a 4-year-old. I'm nonstop.
Yeah.
I don't eat. Like, give me a real solution. And she was like, oh, you won't lose weight. You have lipedema as well. I was like, what?
You're like, wait, excuse me?
She didn't even look up from her paperwork. Like, she just, it was like as if I should have known. And I was like, and she's like, oh, it's a special kind of fat that doesn't react to diet or exercise. And I was like, what? And even then, like, all she told me was that it was like typically like waist down. So it was like the extreme pair, which is what I was. I mean, I still kind of am, but like really before. She didn't mention that it could also be the giant, like, bingo wing arm kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or it's also common with the bee belly, which is like when you're sideways, your stomach looks like a bee.
Oh, yeah. We talk about bee belly all the time on here because a lot of people don't recognize it until pregnancy as well. Yeah. Or it doesn't protrude as much. Yeah.
Yeah. So that lipedema is typically female-based or people like assigned female at birth. It tends to be hormone based. So puberty, pregnancy, menopause will kick it in. I mean, some of it can just kind of happen as well, but it seems like those hormonal changes really like kick it in. I, looking back at pictures, I've always had it. I've always been like the chubbier kid in class and through my friends. Like I never really lost the baby weight. I went from baby weight to lipedema weight and then it just kept going. And I used to joke that, like, my friends all got tits and I got hips. Like, I didn't, I never really got the boobs, but I got the hips. And, you know, they don't talk about how men like hips when you're in high school. It's they're either tits or ass.
Yeah.
And so that really messes with your mind. And then you eventually get in your 30s and you're like, oh, they like those too.
They like it all.
Yeah.
Partners like anything. Yeah. But considering that when we talk about lymphedema, which, as you said, can impact all people, and we see this a lot after, like, cancer treatments as well, I was doing some research, and with that condition, we see in medical schools, doctors are given 15 to 30 minutes of education in 4 years about this condition. But with lipedema, that I'm guessing hardly any, right? Like we're not seeing that because it's also a condition where we see more larger people. So there's not as much of a real interest we find from the medical community to want to help or to listen or to really diagnose. They're very often just telling us to lose weight, which as you're saying, talk about how it works in your body because you've had surgeries now to get removal of it. I mean, this is a huge undertaking. Yeah.
Yeah. So lipedema is your body overproduces the lymph fluid and then the fat cells absorb it and they mutate in a way. It's like the easiest, I'm probably technically wrong, but it's the easiest way to explain it is they mutate. So they're not like a typical fat cell now that, I mean, they change color and texture. Like they really mutate because a normal fat cell is like smooth. And these are like, it's almost like those water beads.
Yeah. That expand. Yeah.
Like that are like the whole like uproar right now. Yeah. It's almost like, but it's firmer. Like you can really like squeeze them. They don't fall apart. Like it's really strong. So the body overproduces lymph fluid typically to like an inflammatory reaction. Foods can trigger it, certain like topical stuff on your skin if your body reacts. And then of course the hormones also can cause you to overproduce and create these nodules. Then the nodules that are mutated just keep absorbing like lymph fluid that you're overproducing.
Wow.
And so like some of the nodules, like I've seen women that have had nodules like that like are like a grape, like not like a grape, but like an apple, like they're huge.
Whoa.
I have one that looks like a raw chicken nugget. Like it was like size of like a chicken nugget. And it cracks me up because I am a very picky eater. As a child, lived off of chicken nuggets. And my grandmother used to joke that I was going to turn into a chicken
nugget. Oh, no.
And so when they showed me that one, I like cracked up because I was like I could just hear his voice of like, you're going to turn into a chicken nugget. But yeah, I mean, they can be teeny tiny to like huge. They can be clustered together like a bunch of grapes. Like it's really, if you like pimply, poppery stuff, look up some lipedema nodules. It's like prime pimple popper content.
Oh, but can you feel the nodules like under your skin?
You can feel them under your skin. Like I can still feel some in my lower arms because we haven't removed them in there yet. And it feels like little, like beads or peas under your skin. I used to joke that my stomach was like those the squishy things that are like covered in a net that all the kids have, and you squeeze it and it like pops out of the net. Because like my stomach, you used to be able to see all the little nodules.
Wow.
Yeah. I have like a picture I can like send you if you want to include with stuff or whatever. Yeah, but like,
of course.
It used to like, it was like, especially if I leaned forward, you could see like all the little like ripply like nodules. And, you know, there's that saying that like smooth like butter, like fat, normal fat is supposed to be smooth.
Yeah.
And like, so if you push down and you can feel like bumps and not like, that's not normal. I mean, in a way it's normal because 1 in 9 women have it, but yeah. One in nine is the same stats as breast cancer, but it's not talked about.
Oh my God. Okay. That drives it even harder home. Yeah. Right. Wow.
It's not talked about because fat phobia and fat bias dismisses us as just, you need to work on yourself first before I'll treat you, when really it's something that we can't control.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How old were you when that doctor that finally gave you a diagnosis but was pretty dismissive, how old were you when that you got that diagnosis finally?
This will show you how long of a timeline I've been kind of dealing with this. So
yeah,
I'm looking back, I've had this since 8, 9, you know, all of that. And then injury to my left leg in high school, which would have been like 99, 2000, like senior year-ish. And then I finally got treatment for the lymphedema first, 2007, 2008, when I was pregnant with my son. I had to beg for treatment for that. The PCP that I saw at the time told me that I was just fat. And I said, one leg's fatter than the other?
Oh.
And he was like, he's kept like trying to dismiss me. He's like, you read too much on Google. And I was like, give me the referral. If I'm right, I get the treatment I need. If you're right, you can tell me I told you so. So that was our agreement.
Wow.
So I left there, walked into the lymphedema wrapping clinic, and they were like, you're the worst we've seen in years, and you're pregnant. And they had me on a table with a pump on my legs before I even filled out paperwork.
That's my jaw is like on the floor. Oh my goodness.
So I did all the lymphedema wrapping first to like reduce my lower legs, waddled back in pregnant with the legs wrapped to that PCP. And he was like, what's all that? I was like, oh, the treatment you didn't think I needed.
Good on you. Love you.
The redheaded sass comes out, and I was pregnant, and my mother was dying. I was a mess. So, like, I didn't take any crap. So I started wearing knee-high compression for lymphedema. 4 years after that, I was getting fitted for new compression, and that's when the PT told me that I had lymphedema. So that would have been when my son was 4, and he's now 14. So that was high school, and then like 25, 26 when I was pregnant, when I got like the official like the lymphedema started. So 4 years later, I would have been right around 30 and finally got a diagnosis of lymphedema. And then, but I was told it was only the bottom half. It couldn't be my stomach. It couldn't be my arms. Like it was my legs. So I was going on with the thought that, and then I was dating a guy. And he convinced me, well, he didn't convince me. We were arguing. And to prove him wrong, I decided to create an Instagram because he said that I would have a ton of followers and I thought he was crazy. So I was going to prove him wrong. I joked this is the one time he was right. And started an Instagram. And I wasn't even showing my compression at first. I wasn't really talking about it. And I was just showing like what I wore because I was always told you dress really well for your size, which is kind of a backhanded compliment and not really a compliment, but I was showing what I was wearing. And then I had this troll that was like annoying all my posts about like your tree trunk legs and da 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 da. And again, the redhead temper kicked in and I did a post where I showed my compression and my legs and my puffy feet and I talked about lymphedema, lipedema, and tagged it. And I got flooded with all these messages of, I have it. My legs look like that. Da, 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 da. Like, I think my girlfriend has it. Like, all these messages. And so then I started talking about it more and started showing the compression and started showing my legs. And then I came across like different other Instagrams that were talking about lipedema and the surgeries that could be done and there were the different areas it could be, like the upper arms. And I was like, oh my God, that makes sense. And that would have been 2018. So like it was a whole another like 12 years before I figured out that it was like my arms and my stomach as well. And then I didn't get to see or meet Dr. Jamie until 2019. And I walked into his office for the consult and I'm sitting there in the gown, which they actually have gowns large enough. Like, so exciting because I'm in a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon's office. I thought for sure, like, I would need like three of them to like cover anything, you know, but they had giant robes or like gowns. And he comes walking in and I had left my knee high compressions on because I thought that my lower legs was mostly lymphedema. And he was like, can you take your compression off? So I took my, I took one off and he got off, like he was on that little doctor's stool they all sit on. And he drops to his knees on the floor, grabs my leg, turns to the nurse that was with us and was like, wow, we have to do this, this, and like just rattled off a game plan. And he turned back and he was like, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. He was like, but your ankle cuffing is so bad. He's like, I'm afraid you're going to lose like your mobility and your like sensation in your feet. He was like, we have to address this. Like, I can't let you not address this. And I was like, well, I'm a broke single mom from Pennsylvania, so that's not going to help. Like, I was like, I just, you know, really wanted an official diagnosis from a specialist and wanted kind of a game plan of how many possible surgeries I would need in case I, you know, ever hit it rich or caved in and found that sugar daddy and, you know, got the surgeries. And he was like, no, like, I'm going to help you. Like, we're going to figure this out. And he was like, I'm a firm believer that people come into your life like when you're supposed to meet them. And I told my staff yesterday that I needed a young lipedema woman that wanted the surgeries or for the right reason to tell her story on this TV show that I'm working on. Can I tell them like your story and your information? I was like, yes, like anything that could possibly help make this happen. And so he put me in like contact and they've filmed a bunch of my surgeries and I don't know if the show will get officially picked up or not. And I mean, I hope it does because like, I hope it gets out there. The story gets out there, but it helped me get like a new life. And so for that, I'm forever grateful, even if I end up getting the disappointment that the show doesn't take off. at least I, you know, but in the long run, I know that I've still helped like hundreds of women.
Not hundreds. Thousands upon that. I mean, you have like 100,000 followers on Instagram, but like more than that, you've done so much more than that. Like your reach, I'm sure, has been millions on certain posts. Like you have made such an impact.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my Barcroft documentary, 3.2 million views. I didn't think anybody would watch it except for my friends that I like forced to watch it. And then like it rapidly hit I think it hit a million in like 3 months. I was like, oh, this is a little bit weird. Like, this is crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's been insane. I told Dr. Jamie from the first consult that, like, whatever doctor I go with has to be okay with me documenting every step of the way. Like, the good, the bad, the ugly, like, everything. Because when I started Googling lipedema, there was no stage 3 and 4 women out there showing it. Like, it was all stage 1 and 2. And, like, I wished I looked that good. I wish I'd stopped it at that point. Like, I wish that I got the relief that, like, you know, because my legs, like, looking back at my old pictures, like, I'm instantly taken back to that pain. Like, my lower legs always felt like they were going to explode. Like, they were just so tight with swelling and inflammation. They just felt like they were going to, like, pop at any moment. And, like, so just the relief is, like, insane.
for anyone listening that's like, like I experience swelling or things, when they go to their general care practitioner, who should they ask for a referral to? Is it for an endocrinologist, or how do they get that extra support to get a diagnosis?
Some PCPs know, not a whole lot. I mean, I still have to fight my PCP because I go to one that has like a whole bunch of different doctors in the practice. So you never see the same person. So like, I'm constantly like, I need clearance for another surgery. Yes, I know. I'm constantly fighting. So I go armed with the U.S. standard of care for lipedema. That's online. It's like a document. I can get you, like, we can get links for that.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes for sure.
I go with the Lipedema Foundation's website. I pulled up on my phone. I go with my before and afters, and they're more than welcome to take my before and afters from Instagram and show. I pull up other women that have had it, and I'm like, look, this is real. This is, you know, and I just kind of go armed with the knowledge and like ask my doctor to look into it, or at the very least, believe me that I've spent hours obsessing over this. Like, I know it's a thing. And there's a quiz. Wonderful. Do I have lipedema? Like, on the Lipedema Foundation. It's linked in my Instagram bio as well. And then, yeah, endocrinologists, vascular surgeons or vascular doctors.
Great.
LANA certified physical therapist, that they specialize in lipedema. That's how I found out, was my PT. A lot of other women have mentioned that they found out from an OT. So a lot of it seems like the rehab side of stuff knows more than like just a general doctor. And also a lot of the lipedema plastic surgeons do consults, where you can do a consult with one of them to get an official diagnosis and hear at the same time, kind of like a surgery plan, even just to keep in mind for future, if, you know, surgery's not your route right now.
Yeah. And so the initial treatments would be compression and then wraps and pumps. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So compression is key. I have a shirt that I had made that says compression surgery, because it's a saying that like Dr. Jamie always says that like the main thing for this is compression. And I wear two forms of compression. I wear my knee highs for the lymphedema because I need a little bit stronger compression for the lymphedema than the lipedema. And then I wear lipoelastic compression, like a bodysuit, like capri length to like right under my chest. A lot of women just stop at like a regular legging height. I do it up over my stomach because I had the tummy tuck for lipedema and I needed to keep the swelling down in that, like during recovery. And I knew with my hips that if I tried to wear a compression shirt, it would just roll up.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah.
And then I would have, like, I would have that gap where nothing was being compressed. So I was like, I have to have a one-piece thing or I won't wear it. So I do the two types of compression. I have a LymphaPress pneumatic pump. I've also used a FlexiTouch in the past. I prefer a LymphaPress. I feel it's easier to use. It's like a zipper sleeping bag almost that you get in. They have like a pod, which is actually like a kind of sleeping bag, or they have like the pantsuit that you zipper up into. And the vibration plates, where you stand on a vibration plate and that helps like loosen and force like the fluid up. Also, you can like lay a leg on the vibration plate if you need to sit and use it, if you can't stand on it, or if you might possibly be over the weight limits they have. When I first started, I was over the weight limit of the one that I had. So I would just sit and lay my leg on it and let it jiggle my leg and get the lymph fluid moving. And that way, dry brushing is really good. And there's tons of tutorials on YouTube. Just search dry brushing for like the lymphatic system. And it'll tell you which direction to brush at, you know, on what parts of your body to get it flowing correctly. There's manual lymphatic drainage massage, which you can do yourself through techniques that are on YouTube as well, or there's specialists that you can go to and get the massage done.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And then the next step is surgery. And so you've gone through six different types of surgeries and you've documented them all. I mean, when you were talking about the little chicken nugget, I was envisioning your one video where you have, you know, it coming out of one of your tattoos. Like, it was so cool to see. I'll put the link to your Instagram in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So I have had six so far. I have at least one more. I think too, I think there's more in the thighs that need to come out because I could feel a couple spots that hurt. But when I was out there in, back in February, he said that he thinks the last one that we have left is the skin removal on the arms. And then we would, during the skin removal, we'd also get the nodules out of the lower arm. It's easier to get it out of the lower arm while you're on the table this way for the skin removal versus when he does the removal of the nodules on the upper arm, you're on your stomach because the nodules are typically like in the back of your arm. So the arms are kind of done in like two separate surgeries or whatever. And then back of the calves. We haven't touched the back of my calves yet. He did the front of my calves as my very first surgery to get that ankle cuffing down. But then he wanted to let them really heal before he did the back because of the lymphedema. Worse, he had to be like very careful to like not make that worse. So he has been amazing in the sense of being very gentle with my lymphedema. He has been very gentle with my tattoos.
Yeah, epic Muppet tattoo on your thigh with all different characters. It's so rad.
I told him from the consult, like, because I had just finished the Muppet tattoo in August and I met him in October.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I got this because I didn't think I would get surgery. Like, this was, I knew how much the sleeve helped me embrace my arms. And I was like, so I thought maybe like I would embrace the thighs if I had like something. Right. And he was like, I don't know how you sat through that, let alone on lipedema. And I was like, I have a really weird pain tolerance. Like, I mean, I said to him, I was like, how much damage? And like, you know, motioned to the Muppet tattoo. And he was like, I will be as gentle as I can. And like, I can hide incisions in some of the dark spots. And if you need a thigh lift, he was like, instead of normally they cut on the inner of the thigh and pull the skin over. He's like, but that would distort. He was like, so I'll cut on both sides and like wrap around the back if we have to. So like, and I was like, well, if damage has to be done, like I understand. I want the relief. But my Instagram followers are very protective of my tattoos. So like every surgery, it's like, are you okay? And then like, once I say I'm okay, then it's like, how are the tattoos? Like, it's like the very next question, especially when we were doing the arms, they were all like, how's Ursula? Like, what's going on? But yeah, he's been very gentle. The Muppet tattoo has been through three surgeries. And the only thing that's a little bit like wonky, and I only notice this, like nobody else notices it until I point it out. Kermit's one eyeball. Because he did the drain through the black pupil and it's like a little bit messed up the way it healed. Oh, but my tattoo artist is like, oh, I can touch that up. No problem. Yeah. But we're just waiting till I'm like completely done in case it has to be a drain spot again. Like we're just like, I'm just waiting on the tattoo touch up until we're completely done. But yeah, he did the video where he had a nodule coming out of Waldorf's mouth. One of the grumpy old men from the balcony of the Muppets. And it was so funny because he pops his head into recovery, like as I'm waking up out of surgery. And he's like,
he's so excited.
Tomorrow I have something to show you. And he was so excited. And I was like very, very groggy. And I'm like, okay. And so then my follow up the next day, he's like, pulls this like giant computer screen over and like shows me the video. And he was like, I just had to. He's like, how often are you going to see a lipedema nodule coming out of a Muppet? He was like, I had to. And he was like, and I knew your humor that you would like be okay with it. And I was like, oh, I love it.
Like, yeah, of course. And it must be so affirming to be with a surgeon that isn't making you feel ashamed or blaming you, but like really just wants to help improve your quality of life.
It's so weird. I feel like I'm hanging out with like a really good friend when I'm with him. Mm-hmm. Like I have lives on my Instagram and stuff that I've done with him. And like, everybody's like, I wish I had that relationship with a doctor. Mm-hmm. Like we just banter and like joke around and talk. And like, that was very important to me because like sarcasm is my defense mechanism when I'm like really stressed out. And I know I can come off sounding like bitchier than I mean to. And I needed a surgeon that like when I'm stressed wasn't going to take it personal because I don't want to offend somebody that's going to go like operate on me.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
But I also didn't want to feel like I had to like not be me in a moment of stress. Mm. And like, I can be like 100% myself with him. I was wearing an NSYNC t-shirt after one of the surgeries and he comes walking in. He's like, really? Really? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hello. Like, and like, so we can just like joke around about that. And like, when he was doing the pre-surgery markups for the tummy tuck, I was like, yeah, you're gonna like gut me like a pumpkin. And he just like stopped and like dropped his head and was like, hate you. That's all I'm gonna envision now.
Yeah, because the nodules are like bright yellowish. Yeah,
you look like that pumpkin gut. It does. Like, yeah. And then so when he showed me like the next day, like the slab of my stomach on the table, I was like, look, that looks like, he was like, shut up. So like all of my social media posts about the tummy tuck, I had like a jack-o'-lantern.
I love it.
We joke around like so well. And then like there was a conference, the Fat Disorder Research Society, and I mess it up every time, but it's FDRS, and they had a conference in Cleveland back in April about all kind of different fat disorders, like lipedema and Durkheim's, and there's a bunch more, but like those are the two that I remember. And he was like, him and his team were there, and they came in a day early, and they were going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he was like, I know you live like close, I'm like an hour and a half, 2 hours away. He was like, come do the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with us and go to dinner. And he had like a private dinner set up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for like his staff. And I like joined him. Aww. And like, we're walking through like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and like joking around and pointing out music. And like, he was surprised I knew the Beatles. And I'm like, I'm not that much younger than you. Like, you're in your 40s, I'm 40, like, we're not that much younger, like, you know, and it was just, like, so good to, like, see him where I wasn't going to be in pain,
right.
And, like, and I wasn't giving him thousands of dollars, it was a nice evening, but, like, it was so much fun just to, like, I know, like, I've never wanted to talk to any other doctor that I've known, let alone be like, I'm going to drive an hour and a half to go have dinner with them and hang out.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That's just how well, like, we really just click. It's just, it's been great. It sounds super cheesy, but like, he's legit changed my life. And I like, am forever grateful. And, you know, I joke around that I'll never be able to repay him, but I've sent hundreds, if not thousands, of women his direction. So in a way, he's getting paid back.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook.
Now, if you're not as diligent as you are with your compressions and all the things that you do, could this all come back?
So it's not, I mean, I guess there's always a chance because it's one of those conditions where we don't know everything yet. Mm. So we don't really know all the causes. We don't really know long-term studies on surgery and how long it lasts, you know, how long your results last, especially since he's one of the few that does the manual extraction where he takes the extra nodules out. a lot of them just do the liposuction. And so whatever nodules don't fit up that little cannula get left behind.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to go with him, is because I knew I had larger nodules. Like, I knew that I didn't want to spend thousands on surgery and the recovery and healing and all of that to know it was left behind. Mm-hmm. And I look at it as, you wouldn't go in and like, oh, I think we got most of the cancer.
Right.
You know, like, you make sure you get
it,
like,
all.
I mean, I know there's like, but like, they try to get off.
Yeah.
And so I knew I needed someone that did the like manual extraction. And it's a huge reason I picked him. And I wear my compression as much as possible. I do have plans to see what my inflammatory foods are. So I do one of those online hair tests. And I don't know if I like fully believe the results. Mm. Because it flagged stuff that I've never eaten in my life.
Oh, wow.
And at least stuff that I hope I've never eaten in my life. Like sweetbreads, which is like intestines or something. Veal. I've never eaten veal. A lot of other stuff. And I'm just like, eh. And then it flagged stuff like apples, apple juice, which I love apple juice. Almonds, chocolate, garlic. Like, garlic. I don't want to be without garlic. Like, I mean, but I mean, I have noticed that chocolate does seem to bother my legs now that I've had some surgeries. Like, I can notice stuff now where before I was always inflamed and always in pain. So I didn't notice a reaction, where now I see the bloat in my stomach. Mm. I feel it in my legs. Like, chips and dip seem to bother my legs, but it's also like a period craving. So it's one of those like
balance.
What do I want to do? So I will have it every once in a while, and then I'll just do more time in my pump to kind of counteract the inflammation sometimes. Because I'm a firm believer that, like, if you deprive yourself, you're just going to end up, like, deep diving. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather, like, have a little bit of chips and dip when I'm craving it for my period. And then, like, go back to my, like, broccoli mm-hmm. and celery sticks. And, like,
absolutely.
Green grapes as my crunchy food, you know. And so I'm very, like, I don't kind of do any real inflammatory diet. I don't do keto or anything like that. Keto made me really, really sick when I tried it the one time. And I was disappointed because I'm like, cheese, bacon, and pepperoni? I can do this.
Right. But it's not sustainable for everyone, but it might be necessary for people with epilepsy for keto. Or
yeah.
I don't. So does keto help with that anti-inflammatory?
I mean, so many lipedema women have had great results from it. And then there's some that have ended up in the hospital because it's made them extremely sick. So
you need to be working with your care team and a nutritionist, because
listen to your body.
Yeah, we're talking about your quality of life and a condition that requires you to eat a certain way, like me with gluten. Like, I can see my swelling and feel my digestive pain, but it's amazing to me that I spent most of my life ignoring it and thinking that it was just part of my life. So I think that's like an overarching lesson that Kara and I always want to share is listen to your body, tune into your body, and advocate for the care that you deserve, because just not paying attention to it or trying to ignore it causes health conditions and issues that, if caught early, won't progress to a stage where you might need surgery. Like you said, if you could have had it caught when it was only a stage two, you could just have your great compressions and move on with life. I mean, you never would have met Dr. Jamie. So, no, I'm just kidding. But it could have changed your quality of life. We've actually had an interview, and I'll put it in the show notes, with a mom who suffers also from lymphedema and lipedema. Sorry. They're so similar. Lip.
I know.
Yeah. And it was getting pregnant again, and then worried, like, if I have a cesarean birth, like, that could make things much worse as well. So pregnancy can trigger things, like you said, the hormones, and then also surgeries and anything that can be invasive can make it so much worse. So if you don't even know that you have the condition, Like, yeah, we need to advocate and for the medical community to listen.
Yeah. And one of my things, like the with the food thing, is since a lot of women in the lipedema world and the Facebook groups really push keto because it worked for them, they will try to tell you that when you're sick from it, that it's that keto flu that first happens when you start it. It might be the case, but it doesn't last for weeks.
Yeah.
So listen to your body, and it's okay if it doesn't work for you. Like, don't beat yourself up over it. I had a dear friend that like tried keto 3 different times and ended up in the hospital multiple times. And the doctor was like, if you do it again, like you might not like survive.
Wow.
But she had people telling her like she had to be keto for lipedema. And like, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Like, it works for you, great. But almonds are on my inflammatory list. And a lot of keto foods are almond flour.
Yeah. That's interesting, right? So yeah. Working so, with like, a nutritionist who's also health at every size informed.
Yeah. So I definitely recommend looking into a nutritionist or like an allergist that can do food allergy testing to see what you react to. That's my next game plan.
Yeah.
I also don't want to purposely eat inflammatory foods because I do want to keep my results. I want the pain to stay at bay. I don't want to pay for this all over again.
Right.
I don't want to do all of this over again.
And then I'm curious too, like, with you going through a tummy tuck, which was medically necessary for how you had been suffering, what was that like, existing in a larger body, going through that? I can only imagine like relief, but also like maybe some of those internalized fat phobic messages that you'd been struggling with your whole life. I mean, I think I'm speaking from my head of how it would feel, but wow.
Yeah. I hate swearing. I mean, I don't hate swearing. I swear all the time, but the only way to really describe the tummy tuck was it was a huge mind fuck.
Yeah.
Like it really, really was. Because I had a really large, like lower hanging part of my stomach. And like I never had to censor myself in like naked photos if I didn't want to, because the stomach literally hung down and covered up everything. Mm-hmm. So to wake up and have 3.5 feet of skin removed.
Wow.
That weighed 20 pounds. I remember like looking down and being like, I have a lab. Mm. Like, I have a lab. Like, it was really, really weird. It was like, oh. And then it was like, why do you like that? Like, you automatically like kind of like goes in your head. And then at the time, I was seeing someone and he knew that I was really in my head about getting the tummy tuck before I even had it. That I was very, very worried that I was going to get the tummy tuck and then I wasn't going to be found attractive. I wasn't going to be liked because guys that like bigger women don't want them to get smaller.
Mm.
Like, I mean, there's some great, don't get me wrong, there's some great guys out there that want you to be healthy and like you for you. And, but a lot of the, if they are attracted to bigger women, they don't typically want you to get smaller. Once they've fallen in love with you and they love you, then they're okay with if your body changes. But right off the bat, if you're new in a relationship or whatever, and I was really, really in my head about it.
Yeah.
And not that it should matter. But when you've had this roller coaster of being told, if you stay this size, you won't find anybody to love you. And at 16, I was nowhere near my biggest. Mm. And then having a failed marriage where I was cheated on, and then having another failed relationship where I was cheated on. And that one was really weird because I was cheated on and I found out that the women were bigger than me. Mm. And much more dramatic lipedema. So then I felt like I was a fetish. And so that was a weird mind juggle.
Yeah.
And then I was seeing someone casually that I thought was really into me for me and was very supportive. And then he literally disappeared after the tummy tuck.
Oh.
And it ended up being for personal life reasons, but the timing of it was so bad.
Yeah.
It messed with my mind for way longer than I would like to admit, because he was a very, very dear friend. And I thought like I had a support system. And so my support system and my friendship was gone. And then like the side benefits was gone. And so like, it was everything at once. And it was when I was in my head about the tummy tuck to begin with. And then I had a seroma that had formed during the tummy tuck. And seromas are common and can happen to anybody of any size with any surgery. It's just where a pocket of fluid forms. I'm at risk for it to happen more often since I have two conditions that overmake fluid. So I knew it was going to happen. Like, I was surprised it hadn't happened sooner. So I had to have a wound back for a little bit. And so I have it's not 5 inches now, but it's a little bit smaller section that's like a different kind of scarring. And nobody but me has ever complained about it. Like, it's literally like in my head. Like, the guy I'm seeing now, he was like, what am I doing? I wouldn't even notice you. I'm like, and so then I'm like, no, but look. And he was like, why are you pointing it out? Like, I'm like, because, like, see, it's different. Like, this, the rest of my incision, you can barely see. Like, he was like, you know, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it's this weird roller coaster of, I'm still me, but are they going to like how I look now? And like, not that it should really, really matter. It's that, like, it's just this weird, it's a weird, weird thing. And I'm almost 2 years post-op tummy tuck, and it still at times is like, oh yeah, I will grab my old sizes when I shop. And then I like put it on and I'm like, oh, this is giant now. Like, what the hell? You know, I've started going into stores and being like, what size should I get? And let the saleswomen like have their field day and pick out stuff, because I misjudge the sizes all the time.
I really appreciate you being so raw and vulnerable and sharing so much around that, because I think so many people can identify with it, especially people who have gone through maybe like an extreme weight loss or something like that. Like, that body dysmorphia of like how my body is changing, and is this still my body, and is this still me? And like, for you, you know, you still exist in a larger body. It's just areas of your body have been dramatically changed for your overall wellness. And that's got to be, yeah, a roller coaster in your brain of processing through it. But also, you said you're not feeling pain anymore, and you know, things are good, and you're glad you did it. But that doesn't mean that you can't still feel the way you feel about it.
Yeah. And it's instant change when you wake up from surgery. So, but the mind doesn't catch up. The mind takes so much longer to catch up, especially when you have years of self-doubt and self like voices of telling you, or voices of other people replaying in your mind. So it's definitely a huge mental journey as well, and a mental struggle. And I remember comparing the tummy tuck to like being like postpartum, and like a few days, like that first week of having a newborn, yes, where everything makes you cry and you're like, I don't know, I just need, you know, like I stopped and leaned on our, I was trying to leave my living room to go to the kitchen, and I stopped and leaned on the TV stand, and my son was like, oh, you can't make it all the way to the kitchen. And I just started crying. Aww. And I was like, I can't, okay. Okay. And I was like, I don't understand. Is everything? And he was like, okay. Like, he was completely like freaked out. But yeah, it's a huge, huge mental thing. And it's also okay that I like my new shape.
Yeah, of course. Like, it's your body. To me, it's you.
And to me, body positivity is being positive about the body you're in at that moment. Bodies change throughout a lifetime. You age, you get sick, you have pregnancies, you have, you know, surgeries for conditions, whatever. Bodies change throughout a lifetime. You need to be positive about it at that moment.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, you know, I've had a lot of women that are like, I can't follow you now. You're getting too thin. You're not body, like, you're not, I'm like, I've stated, and I state with every single before and after picture that I post, I state non-scale victories and what the difference I'm feeling in each one. Or now that, like, an umbrella covers me and I don't have hips that get wet, or I can fit in a bathtub. I can fit in some chairs places. Some I still can't. Like, I'm not super tiny. I still have 62 inch hips. Like, I'm not super tiny, but I have people that are, like, upset about it. And it's like, I don't see one post where I've been like, I'm better now because I got a flat stomach. Like, yeah.
You're not sharing a weight loss journey. You're sharing an individualized journey to your own health. But I can also understand, because, like, I've had friends who have gone through weight loss surgery and they just know, hey, Jen, I'm not going to add you to my private group, or I'm going to share every detail because I know that could be triggering for you. And absolutely, it can be triggering for me. And it can also be triggering when people share before and after pictures that are basically like, oh, I'm so much better now that I exist in a smaller body. And then that makes me feel like, oh, so you just don't want to look like me. But I don't ever feel that way in your content. Like, I don't. I think yours is sharing a specific journey and advocacy around a journey and advocacy around something that so many of us, myself included, who saw a vascular specialist and was like, yeah, you're stage two. And I was like, they had me go to get compressions. And I never went and got sized because I was like, this is really overwhelming. And they weren't very kind or warm about it. And I was just like, okay, well, like everything else, I'll just ignore this. So I've now faced skin cancer and had that surgery. So then we can work on some other stuff now too. But it is scary. It is scary to go and to get help and to, you know, admit that there's something else that could be wrong with you that requires a lot of time and energy and money to address, but we're worth it. And I don't want to become a stage three or four.
Yeah. I don't want you to become stage three or four. Yeah. It gets more expensive to treat. It gets harder to treat. You have a child that you need to be around for. Like, my biggest reason for wanting the surgeries was I lost my mom at 26 to ovarian cancer.
I'm so sorry.
So I didn't want to, you know, do that to my son, and I wanted to be around, and I also wanted to be able to be like the active grandma. So, like, that was my, like, you know, reason behind it. Like, I wanted to be around to torture him as long as possible and, you know, be that mom and grandma. And
Dr. Jamie literally said that your mobility is at risk. Like, yeah, that's a true health concern. And not only to be able to run after those kids, but, you know, you don't want to worry about a pulmonary embolism because you're not being mobile. And, like, yes, all of this matters. And I totally see it from all sides, right? As a fat advocate, I can see where sometimes we're, like, walking a fine line with this conversation. But this is your story, your journey. Yeah. And there's always going to be those people that aren't going to follow you because you might be triggering. There's people that don't follow me or unfollow me because I share something that bothers them. But I'm always like, good for you. Good for you for setting that boundary of this is not the right content for me, or your story is not the right story for me. I just sometimes wish people weren't so mean about it, right? That's the hard part. Yeah.
It's mean for different reasons.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I get attacked sometimes from people that are upset that I've gotten surgeries and they can't.
Yeah.
I have people upset that I, you know, am advocating surgery and not necessarily a diet or exercise because they feel that should be the way. I get men that are now mad that I am taking away the best parts of me. And I went on a rampage about it in one of my posts and, you know, was like, I can handle it because, like, I've been doing this for a while and I know the comments and I know the things. But to somebody that would maybe be new and just starting out, like, those comments could, like, destroy them. Yeah. And I was like, you need to, like, think of what, you know, it's so weird to go through this roller coaster of, you know, being told that you aren't going to find love and aren't going to be attractive if you are larger, and then have these people love you all of a sudden. And then now being told, oh, you're getting smaller, I don't like you anymore. It's like, what's the world? Like, I don't.
You can't
I'm still
win.
Me. I've been me this whole journey.
Yeah. Like,
and it's just the weird, the mix of comments and the mix of messages from the, like, I now know I have this and I'm getting surgery, or I'm talking to a doctor, or I got compression, I'm getting started, to like, how dare you change your life? Like, I can't win.
Because for some people, it's really about them and it has nothing to do with you. Yeah. And I hope you're blocking those creepy people who are saying weird things about your body, because that's not okay at all.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that you put yourself out there so much. So I want you to tell everyone where they can find you. But before you do that, what do you want to say to, like, someone who's been listening to this whole episode and is like, oh, shoot, I think I might have this. I need to, like, do something about it.
Well, remember, I mean, 1 in 9. More than likely, if you don't have it, you know somebody that does. Like, it's, you know, thinking about, like, who you went to school with and class sizes. There's a good chance there's a handful that have had it or have it. And, you know, you're not alone. There is people like you. There's communities, like, there's Instagram, there's roundtables that I'm a part of, like, once a month. There's Facebook groups, though I will warn you, Facebook groups can be very middle school, high school times. Like, there, so there is a community out there of women, and there's a huge community wherein you can find the people you click with. You can find the ones, like, if you want to try the diet, exercise, like, preventative from regrowth or progression group, you can find those. My dear friend Patty has a group called Lipedema Fitness, and she is a later stage 3 and 4 with lymphedema as well. And her husband's a fitness coach, and they modify workouts for larger lipedema bodies to safely do movements. And her whole goal is about movements. It's not weight loss. It's just to keep you active, because she couldn't even walk to her mailbox at one point. And she was like, I got to reverse this if I can.
Yeah.
So, you know, she'll do stuff where you do a push up on the edge of a sink versus, like, actually getting on the ground and trying to do it. So she's great. There's ones that talk the whole keto route if you want to do that. Like, there's ones that, like myself, that do surgery and are talking compression. So you can find your, like, corner of the community and don't necessarily have to hear the stuff you might not want to hear. There are more and more plastic surgeons starting to be trained in it, starting to do it. Insurances are starting to cover it more.
Good.
Be prepared for a fight, be prepared to go through appeals, but they are starting to actually cover it more and more. So there is hope, there is relief, and it basically comes down to, like, you're not alone, it's not your fault, and, like, there's ways to prevent it or prevent regrowth or progression. And there's the surgery option. And if you don't want to do surgery, like, that's fine. Like, nobody, I just knew that, like, my pain level, like, I had to do something because I was a single mom. So if I lost my mobility, like, we were screwed. Like, I didn't have any help. My family wasn't helping. Like, the ex-husband, like, wasn't helping. Like, I needed to be able to, like, be a mom and provide. And so, like, surgery, like, was my option. Like, that's what I needed to do. And I'm grateful I've been able to make it happen. So there's just, you know, it's just a ton of different things about the disease or the condition. And you're not alone.
Yeah.
It's really what it comes down to.
And advocate for yourself. Advocate.
Be prepared for a fight. I say, go in loudly, and I go to every doctor's appointment with the attitude of, you're going to help me and you're going to listen to me. And I will flat out say, like, you took an oath not to do a harm, and you not believing me is causing me harm. You refusing to treat me and look past the fat and that there might be a condition is doing me harm. So if you're not going to keep up your oath, I'm going to go elsewhere and I will walk out. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yes. Like, yes. I love that. Yes.
I mean, you wouldn't keep going to a nail salon that paints, like, all over your hands and you look a mess.
True.
they're not competent. You would go elsewhere. You're not going to go back to a restaurant that keeps giving you food poisoning. You'll go elsewhere. So why do we stick and tolerate with poor doctor behavior? Now, I get there's exceptions where insurance only allows you to go certain places. I get that. But that's when you have to tell them, like, I mean, you took that oath not to do any harm. Like, you need to help me. If you're not going to help me, who will? Where can I go?
Heck yeah. I love it. And I love you, Kara. Can you please tell us all where we can find you? And I will put not only everything that you're going to share with us, but so many of the resources that you've mentioned in the show notes over at plusmommy.com. But where can people pull up their phone right now and find you?
So my main social media spot would be Instagram. That's where I do most of my content, I guess. So it's Pale Ginger Pear. Pale, like extremely white, ginger, red hair, pear shape. So it's very easy, Pale Ginger Pear.
I love it.
I'm also on TikTok and Twitter under Pale Ginger Pear. YouTube and Facebook is Kara the Pale Ginger Pear. And yeah, so I mean, I'm on pretty much anything. And if you go to my Instagram, is like a link tree that has like all the links to all the other ones as well. So it's all there.
Well, thank you for your advocacy work and your vulnerability and for sharing your whole self so transparently in an effort to not only help people feel less alone, but to help people get the care that they deserve. So I think that you're incredible. It has been an absolute delight to chat with you. And I hope that people will check out your resources. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
Until next time. Bye, friends.
Bye.